the Doctor.
It's clobbering time.
Endgame.
Welcome, everybody, to Heroes Asylum, issue 63. We want to thank everybody for downloading, subscribing, finding us. There's a million podcasts out there, especially now with everybody sitting at home alone with a microphone. Thank you for downloading us and subscribing. We appreciate it. Find us on heroesasylum.com and Facebook. But we're going to go ahead and get on with the show. I've got Kane here, as always. How you doing, my friend?
Hello, sir. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I think we have literally digitally spent more time hanging out together this weekend than we have. I mean, really thinking about
you,
it.
You are correct. I think we started a movement. I think we had our Star Wars trivia game last night. Thanks for everybody who participated. If you must know, the captain and I are 1-1. So there will be a rubber match someday. Yeah. But we're 1-1 as far as a Star Wars trivial knowledge goes. But it was a fun time. We had a couple of people come on. A couple of people didn't show up. But all in all, I think it was very successful. And hopefully we'll do more of that stuff in the future, especially the current situation in the country right now.
Yeah, I'd love to be able to like find a few people that are comfortable about doing this. And we do it live, like do a recording and like release it throughout the week. So you guys can just like, you know, I guess so. What's the one? Who does it? Or they used to do it? Collider used to do like the Schmodown?
Collider, yeah.
It'd be fun to do something similar to that, you know, just get a group of people together that are geeks of one thing and just talk about, you know, just do a trivia.
Yeah, and it was there was a lot of alcohol involved and a lot of anger. Not anger, but it was just mostly just colorful banter, I'll just call it. And
I think that's the story of everybody's scoring. There was a lot of alcohol involved, but
there was a lot of alcohol involved. Yeah, there was, and you know, there were some shots taken and questions that I never quite heard of, especially the ones that I received. But you know, we won't get into that. But I think you had a couple hard ones as well.
I did too. Yeah, the page we went to had some questionable questions. Let's just put it that way.
I'll give the listeners an example. I had one of the questions, which was who voiced General Grievous. I'm like, who?
You got some sweaty out there yelling at you, going, "Really, dude? You don't know, man? What's wrong with you, man?"
I didn't. That was one of the things. And then I had another ridiculous question, but like I said, everybody got their chances. And
you also got some cake questions. What was the planet of Hoth covered with?
Oh, that was. If I would have got that wrong, I would have lost my sweaty card. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy.
All right, guys. So we're gonna take a moment here. We haven't done this in a while, thankfully, but recently we have had some losses in the geek community. So we're gonna take a moment. Covers the we do have three. Unfortunately, they do seem to happen in threes, but we have three folks that have passed away with us. Two actually because of the coronavirus. But the one unexpectedly. So we'll go ahead and start with the first one was Andrew Jack, best known for playing, he played Major and then General Imat on Star Wars, The Force Awakens, as well as in The Last Jedi. He also had played in Solo, but a different character. He voiced a different character. He was an actor, but he was better known as a dialect coach who had roles in Star Wars movies. He also helped out in The Lord of the Rings, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Avengers, a couple of James Bond movies. He has been in the movie field for a very long time, and he may not always be on the screen, but he is always behind the scenes, really. And he died at an age 76 again from contracting the COVID-19. And he was a big loss for a lot of the folks that were especially involved in Star Wars, because he was there to help them, just, you know, in guiding them through speaking the proper way and trying to lose accents or gain accents for that matter.
Well, that's a big thing, especially when you have, I take it he's a dialect coach as well, right?
Yeah.
He's a dialect coach. That's a very hard thing to do, because like you just said, let's just say if you're coming in with a certain accent, to get rid of it and just to equate or emote that, you know, language you want to portray in a Star Wars or any kind of movie, you know, whatever you're going for, it's hard. And you need those coaches on there. They're going to direct you and show you, hey, you know, this is the proper way you're going to say the S like this instead of like that. And those are very valuable coaches to have. So to see him gone, it's once again, this horrible thing is claiming another life, and it just ended too soon. 70 years young, yeah. Same age as my father is. So it's just, you know, it's a tough thing right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to look through some of the ones he was involved in as far as movies goes. I mean, there's just so many that he helped for, you know, like I said, he was part of, the, you know, he was a Moloch in a Solo Star Wars story. That's the he, you know, he worked with Sean Astin with his work on The Lord of the Rings. He worked with Cate Blanchett on Lord of the Rings. So, I mean, he definitely had his hands in a lot of big productions, and he will definitely be missed. Next one I have, actually, you had brought it up, Logan Williams. You had posted this earlier this week. He was a Canadian actor, best known for his portrayal as young Barry Allen in the CW TV series The Flash. He suddenly passed away. I don't think we've ever, it's been a few days for us, but I don't think we've gotten any news as to what happened. He was only 16 years old.
Still no word, actually. I was looking it up today, and they still don't know. Just suddenly passed away. Could have been his heart stopped in, you know, the middle of the night. It happened to a Disney actor a couple of years ago. It just his heart stopped, and that was it. I don't know if this is the same cause, but
right.
I mean, I'm just conjecturing at this point. It could be anything. I mean, we don't know. But 16 years old, way too young.
Way too young.
Too young.
Really, like, a really young career too. He's only been Flash. He played Miles Montgomery in When Calls the Heart, he was like 13 episodes. He did that 2014, 2016. And he played in one of your favorite shows, Supernatural. He played in season 11, an episode Plush. He appeared as a Max Johnson. So, yeah, he's a Canadian actor. So I'm sure he worked a lot in that realm. Yeah, but there's no connection, of course. You know, that's a big talk is COVID. No connection. He just passed away suddenly. So hopefully we'll find out something that it was more natural than anything worse than that.
Yeah, let's just hope that.
I haven't heard much of this, the Canadian acting group being the party animals that the LA group is, so I don't think it was
those Mounties, they go nuts sometimes, yeah. But you know, you never know. But big loss. Thoughts and prayers go out to the family, of course. 16, way too young, just ridiculously too young, and horrible loss.
And our third and final one this week, hopefully, Jaws actress Lee Fierro. Also passed away from the COVID-19. She was 91. Fierro is best known for playing the mother of the second shark victim in the first Jaws movie, the one that actually went over to the sheriff, Brody. Brody, and sheriff slapped Brody's him in the face and said, you knew that he was there. You know, that you knew there was a shark out there, but you let him go. So, she passed away. She was living in a assisted living facility in Ohio, but it was notated from Martha's Vineyard's time. She was actually a Martha Vineyard native. She was one of the locals they hired. She was very big she was a drama teacher and mentor at the Island Theater Workshop out there in Martha's Vineyard. So, a local lady, but if anybody's a fan of any movies, that is probably one of the, you know, the powerful scenes from that movie alone.
Didn't Brody warn people though beforehand?
Yeah, he was trying to get the city council to put up signs and to.
I don't know. I never understood that scene because I was like, wait a minute, he tried to help, and now you're blaming him.
But she didn't know that. They.
Oh, okay. I thought she did. I thought that was well known that he went to the council. I didn't. Okay.
No. I think it was between him and the mayor, and they were fighting back and forth with the council. The council's like, yo, we know this is our big summer. We're gonna make all our money, Dad. The mayor's like, listen, just put up safety, do safety signs, make sure you do everything you can to protect them. But we're gonna have the beach open no matter what. So that's where the dickhead mayor comes in, and then of course his kid, you know, almost gets attacked, and then he finally has to sign it, you know. So it's a big twist.
Good movie, by the way. I think one day we'll tackle that one. But
that was the point of doing that category thing in mm-hmm. midnight movies, getting away from our themes, but actually doing movie themes, classic themes,
and hopefully that would be a really good one to sit down and talk for about a couple hours. There's a lot of thoughts I got about that movie. All good. So
that was one of the movies. Like I said, when I came up with the idea, I was like, that's one of those movies I'd love to just one of us bring up, or we're going to bring up another classic like that.
I think it's going to happen. I think eventually there's two great minds here. Eventually that movie's going to come up, except for Batman v Superman, which took us a long time. Some guy over here.
all right, guys. So that is our three memorials for the week. Again, hopefully we will see the last of them. And just a big bag of wind goes out to all three of them.
Yes, sir.
News from Elite Missions Ward.
And now we're going to go ahead and jump into our new segment, the Admissions Ward. We've got a few things on here. I think I've got three, and I think Kane said he found two. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go ahead and jump. I guess since I got three, you'll take the middle. We'll go ahead and start off with the first one. It's from comicbook.com. Reported, one of the more surprising twists to the finale of the Skywalker saga from Rise of Skywalker was actually planned for a while. One of the weird ones that we're all like, really? That's how that's going to go? But it was the twist that Rey would eventually be a Skywalker, that eventually take the name of Skywalker. That had actually been in planned and been talked about since 2014. So from the beginning of this journey of that saga, of that trilogy, it had always been in the plans. So I know a lot of people felt like, oh, that was kind of a shoehorn thing or silly thing to do, but it looks like it was something they were going to do all along. What do you think about that? Because I know you're such a huge fan of this movie.
You should have been in the conversation I had with a friend of ours till 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday. We talked exactly about this movie. If that was the original plan, it was for her to be a Skywalker. I just question, you know, how they got there. But if that's the way they wanted to go and it was planned out like that, then I'm fine with it. Because I think at the beginning when I saw Force Awakens, everybody kind of like was saying she was a Skywalker and, you know, eventually meeting Luke, getting trained. And then I just didn't like the execution of how she got there. You know, if she's a Skywalker, she's a Skywalker.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing, like the ending to me was just, like the ending was real to me kind of shoehorned. It felt forced. Like if we gradually organically got there and then, oh, yeah, you guess what? You are a Skywalker. Okay. But it like you saw like little things, like little hints in The Force Awakens, like the way that Leia looked at Rey, and then it almost like Han looked at Rey in a different way too. Like if she could have been like somehow, like this is not, you know, take it for what it's worth. If she could have been like maybe a kid that somehow was Leia's and Han's, and that, you know, somehow these two had forgotten, maybe Snoke had somehow just taken their memories away. I mean, I'm just giving conjecture. It could be anyway, but I just question the execution, how they got there. But her being a Skywalker is fine. I mean,
it's just Skywalker name. It's not blood Skywalker. So, I mean, I get it. That's fine. It's just a name because she's more Skywalker than Palpatine's. And she didn't know Palpatine's. She was raised literally by the Skywalkers, you know, and not raised as far as a kid, but she was raised and brought into the Jedi world and into the rebellion by Skywalkers. So, you know, taking their name, completely get that. That's, you know, that, you know, we've seen that in real life, you know, but father or stepfather or stepmother raising a kid and adopting them because what they've felt is their true family.
Yeah. It's not about who, you know, who sired you. It's about, you know, who raised you.
Yeah.
And you can take that, you know, last name or not. And, you know, that's basically how it is. And that's basically what happened in Rise of Skywalker. So like I said, I'm fine with it.
Like I said, yeah, it came from a more reliable source than some of the more recent Star Wars rumors. And until I see it from a heavier, reliable source, it's like StarWars.com, I don't trust it.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. I know how you feel.
So what do you have for your next one?
Guess what? We have some more, sadly, we have more delays, which is, it's going to happen. Marvel has announced they had to shuffle some movies around because of what's going on with the COVID-19. And we have new release dates. Everybody who's looking forward to Black Widow is going to come out in May. You're going to have to wait a little bit long, not too much longer, but it's going to be coming out in November. It's going to be replacing the spot of the Eternals. Eternals will now be released February 12th, 2021. Shang-Chi will be released May 7th, 2021. Doctor Strange and one of the greatest titles of all time, The Multiverse of Madness, will be released on November 5th, 2021. So next year, Marvel's going to have three movies. Look out for them. Thor: Love and Thunder will be released February 18th, 2022. Black Panther 2 will be released May 6th, 2022. And the final one, which I know Captain Mike is looking forward to, is Captain Marvel 2 will be released July 2022 on the 8th. A couple other movies, Artemis Fowl and Mulan will be released on Disney Plus in the coming weeks. So,
yeah, I think they're talking Artemis Fowl this week, actually.
I know that was one that's recently. Actually, when I was I won't say where, but actually that was one of the books that I read was Artemis Fowl, and I actually found it kind of cool. So I'm actually looking forward to that one because, you know, we have a lot of time when you're somewhere, you know, I'll just put it that way. But I thought the book was kind of cool. You know, it's kind of like a different, I kind of think of like a darker version of Harry Potter.
Right.
So I'm actually kind of looking forward to that.
But, they actually had that book in summer camp.
Yeah.
We're going to call it summer camp. Call it summer camp.
Can we call it summer camp? Okay, we're going to call it
summer camp. When we need to discuss this, this is called summer camp now.
In summer camp.
For those of you in the know, when Kane says summer camp, he means something else. And we all know what that other thing is.
Yes. You guys can use your imagination. So when I was in summer camp, that was one of the books. They had that,
really?
No, they did. Seriously, they had that. I read a couple books in there. A lot of Tom Clancy books are in it, too. Which is really good.
Very cool.
Yeah. So I had a lot of time, but it's
I am looking forward to Artemis Fowl. I haven't read it, but it looked interesting.
So if they go by the book, I mean, obviously they're going to have borrow some things from the book, but if they do, it's really clever the way they do it. And it's almost like a darker Harry Potter. That's the best way I can put it. But it's really cool. It's really cool. I can't wait to see it actually.
Very cool. Very cool. My next one, and that's something actually you posted, and I'm surprised you didn't bring it up. I thought you would have. Animaniacs reboot. It's going to be bringing back the original cast, plus my favorite. I've actually got them on my desk right now. Pinky and the Brain. So they will have Rob Paulsen, Jess Harnell, and Triss. I'm going to butcher that. McNeil returned for Yakko, Wakko, and Dot with Paulson and Maurice LaMarche reprising the roles as Pinky and the Brain. I actually got to meet them, Paulson and Maurice at the Comic-Con or Megacon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they were actually really good. They busted out and doing the voices, and it was great.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see them.
And, because they started, going back and forth with each other. I think it's Paulson. Rob Paulsen, when you actually get to see him, it's not what you would think for a voice actor. This dude looks like a full-on metalhead. Long hair, cowboy hat. I mean, he just screams like 80s metal. His guy was so cool. It looks like they're all going to be returning for the reboot. And it looks as though it's going to be going through Hulu. I guess they're hopping on board with the reboot thing and doing some new releases. But I think this is a good thing. Because it's not them re-finding new voice actors. It's the original group. My big question is, it's going to be the same writers. Because that was part of the twist of this. If nobody's been an Animaniac or saw any Animaniacs or was a fan, there was a cartoon, but very geared towards adult humor with a kid twist.
Yeah.
It was more of an everybody's cartoon.
See, the only question I have, and the reason I didn't want to report on this week, is I have a question for you, and it involves this. We're getting Animaniacs, we're getting Pinky and the Brain, but are we going to get the Good Feathers?
Well, I would hope so.
I hope we have to get the Good Feathers back.
If you don't have them, maybe at least in the background, because that's originally how they started. They started in the background as they would walk around. So maybe the beginning is just the Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain, and then they'll see how it picks up. And maybe bring in the rest because you had the Good Feathers. You also had the little girl and her dog. There was another one.
There was a couple other ones.
There were a couple.
And they were so good. And they weren't like the length, because I think the animated episodes were maybe 30 minutes. And theirs was like just a little cut. It was like a 3 or 5 minutes, and it was so cool and funny. Okay. That's like the Good Feather ones were hysterical. They just remind, hey, remember me? And then you got to be, it's just like that spoof on Goodfellas, which I had just died laughing every time the Godfather would show up, because he's always talking in this weird language. You can never see his eyes, but he would eat all the birds. He didn't walk away.
Yeah, hopefully, like I said, I think that's probably how they're going to start, because that's how they started beforehand. They were just in the background, and they do a quick like 10-second skit. And then they'd follow whatever show we were following. They'd catch up with those main characters. So hopefully we'll see them.
Nothing but goodness when you bring the Animaniacs back.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I'm just hoping we got a good writing staff, because that's going to be the big factor in just the Animaniacs period. Yes, the voices were great. You know, the spinning, you know, making spoofing of you know, pop culture. But there was just something in that writing that was so well done for a show that, you know, originally we thought was a kid's show. And then we come to find out, you know, it turns into an everybody show, which is great. That's a good mark of good writing. The one I can think of the most that took that kiddie thing theme and branched out to an everybody theme was like the Star Wars Clone Wars. That first movie and that first season, very kid friendly. But then they started branching out and approaching stories and issues that were more up for, you know, older folks and more, you know, more everybody. Like I said, I'm trying to, the best way to say is that more everybody's involved in it.
Yeah, they weren't just geared to one, you know, age range. They made it for everybody, and that's the best way you can do it. And like you said, I felt like, you know, you would think, like, because when the Animaniacs came out, it was like early 90s, I believe. And it was one of the first cartoons to actually be geared to more of the broader audience. Because before that, all the other cartoons were just basically kiddie. That's all they were. They had one audience and that was it. And then after that, I think Animaniacs kind of opened the door for like, hey, you can make these, but you know what? Adults can watch them too.
Well, I think this was during the WB's phase when Batman animated series came out. This came out. So they did touch more in adult themes. You know, I'm rewatching the Batman animated series right now. And it's just some of the best storytelling and writing. I just drop my jaw sometimes. I think earlier this week I was watching the Two-Face, the origin of Two-Face,
good.
I mean, it's so, just like, my God, that's just so great writing. I wish there could be somebody to carry on and do something more like this, not Batman, but another character, branch out to another character and have the scoping universe and really address, you know, like multiple personalities. I mean, that those two episodes right there just are just brand, you know, perfect for discussing what a multiple personality is and having your inner demons come finally out.
And it was so well shot too. I mean, that two-parter is probably one of the best two-parters they ever made. Like the reveal that when he's in the hospital, that he has been burned and he has got two sides, and the look on Batman's face as he's just like horrified, like, oh my God, yeah, what has happened to my friend? And the music and like the thundering going outside when he's in the hospital.
And I thought that scene, the one you're talking about where he's in the hospital or even when he's in that hallway out just
outside. Oh,
but the rain, man, dripping down the
rain dripping.
Just, yeah. It was just amazing. Oh,
there's just so many good episodes that Batman, the animated series did. Like, I think another one that I've talked at nauseam, maybe not on air, but to you off air, is the one with the child actress that she never grew up. And like towards the end of the episode,
Baby doll,
yeah. And she just like, she's going on this killing spree, but then she goes into this fun house and Batman's chasing her. And she finally goes up to a mirror where she sees herself as an adult. And instead of like, just, she just breaks down, starts crying. And Batman is like, just looks at her, instead of like putting her in cuffs, he just kind of consoled her and just felt bad. Yeah. Because this is a chick who never grew up and just, she had all this fame, but stayed a kid, but had the mind of an adult. So
same thing. I mean, you go into the Justice League Unlimited, the one, probably the most heartbreaking episode was when I think it was Ace and she's like, she knows she's dying, and Batman, instead of like fighting her, just sits there and holds her hand on the swing as she dies. You know, it's just one of those deep, but that was, again, that was WB during the 90s. And I know we're not going to rank, you know, so the 90s were the greatest, but WB really had a good idea, and whoever was running WB in their animated series back then, they were doing it right, and they were getting the right writers in there. I think if they could recapture that, they have in their way in the animated DC world, but I think with their television should recapture this.
Yeah, they definitely could take some pages from those guys. I don't know if Dini was running it or with Bruce Timm, but I know they were directly involved.
Those guys were still like babies when it came to into the industry. I know they've had other stuff before Batman, but I think they were very, you know, there was somebody else.
It's just one of those things we've talked about a lot, is that when you have fans of the material, they're going to put care into it. And those guys love that stuff. And you could tell when you were watching them, they're like, oh, you know what? Yeah, it's animated, but you can get invested into the storylines and into the characters. And then you can keep going forward. And just, you know, nowadays we don't have a lot of that. If we do, we got to find it. It's just too much fluff sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, I love the CW shows, but sometimes they add a little bit too fluffy things. And if they would just stick with, you know, one linear, but that's another topic. But yeah, so Animaniacs is coming. Sorry about that.
What do you have next?
I have actually a sequel to a thing that we talked about literally last week. We were talking about Stargirl, and, you know, we're going to have the Justice Society coming in and Captain Midnight and all those wonderful characters. And I think the one question I asked you last week, and you had said, I think they'll be mentioned, and I have to give you credit, sir, on air, that you were correct. They have confirmed that Alan Scott Green Lantern and J. Garrick Flash will be referred to in the first season of Stargirl. They're going to be kind of like these looming characters over the Justice of the Justice Society. I'm not sure if they're going to have a picture in the background. Maybe they'll talk about a story like, hey, I remember this one time when we went up with the Green Lantern. Oh, you knew Green Lantern? Like, I think they'll be referred to as that. I didn't think they would be, but I was wrong. So that means maybe season two, they might pop in. Who knows? Maybe you'll get them in a flashback. But that's good. They're not going to ignore Green Lantern and Flash. I'm just happy about that because they could easily ignore them. But, you know, those are the two founding members of the Justice Society, so you can't really ignore them.
Well, I've always looked at the Justice Society as the same thing with when you look back at, like, the Watchmen, how you had the older ones, and they talked about the older ones, but there were a few characters that you never really saw. And I always assumed that, you know, if we're not going to get them in if we don't have them in the actors list of, hey, this actor's playing this, that's kind of how we're going to get them. We're going to get them, like, maybe in shadowy flashbacks where we'll see a green glow or something to hint to that they were there and we were, you know, and refer to them. And who knows, maybe the backstory to this is something that happened to those two characters. And that's why they're not there. Something happened and that's why the team broke up afterwards. And now this new team is trying to get them back together and they're fighting going, no, you can't get back together. Something bad happened. You know, so we've seen this very similar story in other areas before.
Yeah. But, which I don't mind. I mean, yeah. I think I, you know, you probably misconstrued me last week where you wanted me to think that, oh, you want them on the show because they're part. I want them, but I don't want them to overshadow Stargirl.
Right.
That's not what I
want. I think those characters are so big, they would not on purpose, but they would overshadow.
Definitely they will.
If you do them wrong and they don't overshadow, then they're wasted and then everybody's going to be unhappy. No, I wasn't thinking that you were thinking it that way.
Oh, okay, okay.
I just know if those characters are there, they're going to overshadow everybody.
Well, it's like they, for years, Mark Guggenheim and talked about in a CW universe, he's like, how come Batman has never shown up? He's like, if you introduce Batman on an Arrow show, it becomes, instead of becoming an Arrow show, it becomes a Batman show. Yep. And I totally agree with that. Like, you don't want him there because he's going to overshadow them. And
I had read something a couple weeks ago where they were saying that there was the Batman was going to be inspired by.
I would have hated Arrow. That.
I know.
I would have read that article. I'm sorry. That you can have Batman disappear for 3 years. That's fine. You could not even have him on the show. That's fine. You could not even refer to him. That's fine. But to have him being him, he was inspired by the Green Arrow. That's where I'm gonna draw.
I don't mind that because I mean, when you look at what they did in the animated series for Batman, he was inspired by the Gray Ghost. So why can't he have a superhero doing something and him going, I've been hurt, but I like some of the things he did. I'm gonna take that mantle just like he did with Zorro. Batman has always had a vigilante he looked up to. Why couldn't it be Arrow?
And I wish they would introduce the Gray Ghost somewhere.
But that maybe the era was, I mean, that's only when I read it, I was like, I would be cool with that because in my mind, Batman's always had an inspiration.
Yes.
So, but you as a diehard Batman feel like Batman's, no, Batman's all on his own. He's original.
That's another great episode of the animated series,
yeah,
by the way.
Great one.
Oh gosh. And they had who was the voice of the Adam Green West. Ghost? It was Adam West. That's right. That's what it made even better. And he wasn't campy.
No,
he was very monotone, very low. And I was like, oh, that. Okay, I don't want to talk. I can't talk about the animated series anymore. We're gonna steer off course.
But all right. Well, yeah. So that's I'm looking forward to Stargirl. That's one of the newer ones. I am really looking forward to because I was a in the closet Starman fan. In the 90s when they kind of redid him. And so I was able to delve into the old and to the new Starman. I never really got to collect him, but he was my B level as far as like, if I went in and I had enough money, I was going to get a Starman no matter, you know, definitely, but I had to get my top ones first. Then Starman was next. So that's where I really went, delved into him and then just kind of faded away. But the Stargirl was also introduced a little bit during that time as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am definitely looking forward to it. That's one of the few CWs I'm looking forward to.
And we're gonna get Stripe. I can't believe we're gonna get Stripe on that. That's what I can't believe. I'm like, okay, you're gonna introduce Stargirl. You're not gonna have Stripe on there.
Have to.
And guess what they do? Yep. They introduce Stripe. I'm like, okay, guys,
they got the technology now, you know, to make it to where it's not as expensive, so they can get away with it. And
he looks spot on from the animated series.
Yeah, so. looks great.
So can't wait for that.
So my next one is, and I do apologize so bad when I say this. So please hear me out when I say this. I do apologize. I'm ripping off a Band-Aid. Swamp Thing writer Gary Duberman teased last November that should the show have gone forward, it definitely would have. They'd already had plans for a more dark and twisted horror vein, to the point where they were, you know, they started the first season out where it was literally a mini movie. We had a beginning, a middle, and an end. One story was being told through the whole thing. And that's, you know, but what he liked more about the comic books with Swamp Thing was, you know, you would get a werewolf in the hospital or something strange like that. So they originally were planning out the second season to be more horror based. And at one point, the main Swamp Thing series was set to run at least three seasons and would have led to a spinoff or even a Justice League Dark team up. So I when I read this, I was like, man, I know. I was like, I got to rip off the Band-Aid, but I think that would be an amazing
rip it off two Band-Aids now.
So it is kind of, well, hey, I'm a Justice League Dark fan. So definitely. I'm hoping maybe there's still hope with it, that they return again. I still go back to that one scene where we see the Swamp Thing in the last crossover for CW.
I know that was the only thing that gave me.
Yeah. Why would they put him in there? He's a dead show. He literally got canceled 5 days after the start of the first episode. And so they definitely had time because that was over a year ago. Or no, it was about a year ago, I think.
About a year ago, yeah.
Yeah. So they canceled it about a year ago. So why would you even bother putting him into the CW if you're not hinting that he's still around? And when I read this, I was like, God, let's hope they can get their shit together and do it.
I hope. And you know what? Bring back the production team. Bring back the writer. Bring back everybody, because everybody on that show was so good. And the show was so good. Mm-hmm. I think every week the episodes got better and better. Yeah. And I remember the episode where you freaked out when you saw the Blue Devil.
Yeah.
And then you find out the Phantom Stranger's around. I'm like, what? Yeah, the Phantom Stranger?
I was waiting for Constantine and Zatanna to show up.
Oh boy. That would have been it. The only thing that the Phantom Stranger was missing was that weird hat and that giant clock, that Flavor Flav clock that he used to wear in the comic. Flav! But good one, sir. But we've talked ad nauseum about the Swamp Thing, how much we loved it.
Yeah, and that's why I said I turned off a Band-Aid, sorry.
Oh, I just, now the Band-Aid's off, I just, oh man, if I can write letters, like, remember back in the day, fans used to write letters, and like, please put us back on, like.
You still can, it just goes into their junk folder.
And yeah, it's not going to make a point, it just.
But hopefully, maybe we will see something. We do have the end of the animated series world right now, the mass animated series we've seen for about a decade now. This their last one coming out is going to be a Justice League Dark, which I thought was very interesting that they but who knows if this one does really good, maybe they'll start really focusing on a Justice League Dark and we will get a Swamp Thing finally more, and hopefully they just bring back the guy and say, hey, come on, just, you know, we don't need the actor anymore to play Alex, we just need Swamp Thing.
And even the actor who played Alec Holland was fine too. But like you said, you don't need him. The guy who's playing Swamp Thing did it. He's so creepy. Swamp Thing good.
Swamp Thing is Swamp Thing. It's really all it is. You know, after Alex goes away, it's just Swamp Thing. So.
And if you guys have never read Swamp Thing, I would suggest the Alan Moore run.
Definitely.
To me, that's the best run, I think. It deals with him going to hell to get Abigail's soul back. It's just, that's a really good one. That's why I think when I talk to the captain sometimes about the Swamp Thing show, and they would actually show the swamp. And I think one of the theories that I always had is that, you know, they kept saying the green and all this stuff, like that. You don't know how the swamp got that way, but was the swamp directly underneath the portal to hell? That was always one of my theories. Yeah. That were you could introduce so many other things, and that whole Justice League world can get like. Just so many good things. I mean, I could talk about it forever, but I'm not going to.
All right. Well, that is the end of the admissions ward. We have no more news. We're going to actually jump in. Actually, we got enough time. We're going to do a quick discussion about Picard. I know there's a lot of people out there. This is a real touchy subject with a lot of folks about the Star Trek Picard series. I finally was able to catch up, finish it. Kane got to it before I did, and he has been dying to talk about it. So I thought it'd be kind of fun for us to just drop it here and go from there. So I was able to catch up to it. What did you think as far as, I don't know how much of a Star Trek fan you are.
I'm not as big a Star Trek fan as you are, but I do like and appreciate Star Trek. I like it for what it is. My favorite series was Next Gen. That to me was like, you know, better than the OG series because it just made the story go further, farther. Yeah. You know, not to say anything else, but
it was more than three seasons, so that kind of helped too.
Yeah, there's a lot more.
Flesh those guys out.
Oh, big time! I think it was 22 episodes a season, if I recall correctly.
Yeah,
my favorite episode was Best of Both Worlds, Part 1 and 2, and the ending, which had the Q and all that stuff. But Picard, to me, was like a love letter to the Next Generation, and they included a lot of new characters, which I dug. I mean, I'm not sure about the Romulans. That was okay. The inclusion of the Borg cube, I thought, was a great idea. This desolate Borg cube. And then you find out these guys, they had Hugh show up, and he's not really a Borg anymore. He's basically more human now. The only issue I had was the ending. You had me on board with everything until what happened with Picard at the end. That, I have to question a little bit.
The death, or actually, guys, we're going to scream out spoilers right now.
Spoilers.
Yeah, sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, I'm going to put the spoiler alert out there. The death or what happened after the death?
After the death. After the death. Like everything to the death, it's fine. It's just like after that. I'm like, so wait a minute. Now he's a synthetic? Yeah. He's basically a robot.
Yeah. I have the same feelings. I was great up to that moment. I was perfectly fine with letting him die. It would have been a great, like you said, a love letter to the fans, a send-off for Picard. If they wanted to, they could start a new season of Picard, naming that ship Picard and having that group of people continue.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe instead of the Doctor, their holographic Doctor, it then be Picard. I would be kind of
cool. That would have been great. He could have been there. Like the ship intelligence. Yeah.
Yeah. He could be there. Cause I mean, I know they were talking about, you know, he talked to Whoopi about coming back for season 2 to redo Guinan. And I think that would have been great. Yeah. He needed to, if they were going to put it to where he died, let him die, let him go. I know it almost was like a child writing it at the very end after he died.
That was my whole issue.
Okay, you're back to life. Oh, no, and then you don't need food. No, well, but you will eventually die. It was like, no, you're just trying to snowball this thing into just a quick bow, and it's just not neat enough for me.
It just, to me, it screams that we want to keep this going and make money off it. That's what it really screams to me about. If he would have died, I would have been cool with it. And yeah, all those other ideas, like he's the ship intelligence. You know, you have the USS Picard. You have all these callbacks to Picard. You can still have the show being called Picard. He can still be on there. Not a lot. Like you said, a ship intelligence. And I'm fine with that. But now you're going to keep him going as a robot. Yeah, and that's just like, okay, come on, guys.
And then the whole 7 of 9 and what's her name holding hands.
What was that about? That come
from? I mean, I'm completely fine that if they are characters that way. But again, if you go back into the history of Star Trek, 7 of 9 hooked up with Ensign Kim during Voyager. So
yeah,
I mean, is she both? You know, is she bi or something? But there was no hint to that. All you saw
exactly. Was there was no hint. There was nothing.
If there was like a little, you know, like, hey, how you doing? Kind of like you saw a little chemistry when they first met. But I don't even, if I'm remembering through the season, I don't think they met because that character went off. I can't remember the character's name off the top of my head, but that character went off when 7 of 9 joined because that character went off to go see her son. So again, there's another sign that she was had a heterosexual relationship. It just, like I said, there's just no like red flags going, hey, you know, there's a romance going on here. I would have been like, oh, okay, it's in bloom. And then when we see them holding hands at the end, got it. They got together. Perfect. Awesome. Love that. But just like kind of tossing it in there to appease a check mark just seemed kind of weird to me.
It just seemed very peculiar, that ending. And I it's like you said, like a 5-year-old wrote it. Like everything to that point was fine.
Yeah.
I dug the synthetic storyline. I thought it was really cool. It was like a new, different type of thing. I even dug those weird ships they had that had like, they're like giant flowers.
Yeah.
The Romulans were actually used pretty good. I remember that one chick who, she was like the Romulan queen or something. She was kind of badass until 7 of 9 kicked her ass. Like everything they had, the ideas were there. The call, dude, when Riker showed up with all those ships, I freaked out. Yeah, I was like, oh. And then he said, he's like, hey, Picard, don't worry about it, dude. I'm always going to have your back. I'm like,
yeah, and I think that would have been a perfect goodbye moment for them. Again, there were just so many great moments that like, hey, this is their goodbye moment. This is their goodbye moment. And it, the one thing that I thought, did think it was kind of strange was that they all fucking left. Like all the whole fleet just went, boom, we're gone.
Yeah, like,
see, hang around.
You
know, like,
you ain't gonna talk to your boy for a while. Like,
and it just kind of strange. We're out. Peace. We gotta go get milk.
Diana. Happy hour's gonna start. Late in hours. We gotta be there, man.
Yeah, it was just kind of very strange, but I completely agree with you. It just kind of went weird.
I
know a lot of people were complaining about like, well, this is the future. I thought they didn't have money. All this. No, what we always saw in Star Trek was the Federation. If you were part of the Federation, you didn't have to worry about money. But we always ran into these vagabonds, these pirates, these you know, people on the outskirts of the Federation that they didn't want to join your club. They were still on the outskirts, and they dealt with money. Ferengis dealt with money and credits. We saw
the Ferengis were kings of that. And so
that was one of the kickbacks I saw from a lot of people online. Was like, I thought we didn't need money. Like, did you not watch the show, or did you just watch a couple episodes? Because
I think they didn't grasp that, because there's a lot of references that the Federation was never about money. I mean, one of the best references was probably in the what was the Star Trek movie with the Borg in it? I forgot. I think it was First Contact, where he was talking to one of the refugees from the planet, and the refugees from the planet is asking like, "Oh, you don't do this for money?" And then Picard responds, "He's like, well, in the future, money's not really a big issue. We were more about exploring.
Well, there was
sharing things.
Yeah, there was one episode where they found three or four people that were like in freezing." And they were like for like 100 years or 200 years, and they were being brought out. And one was like a lawyer, one was a mother, and the lawyer's like, "Well, I need to get a hold of my bank. I need to start getting my funds together." And they're like, "That bank went belly up like 200 years ago." And then I remember that one.
Oh, I think I do recall that one.
There was like the one cowboy. He got an electric guitar made so he could pluck, and Data's all fascinated with him and his whiskey. You know, he gets whiskey from the replicator. And it's like, that's not real whiskey. What is that?
Yeah, they just couldn't deal with all that stuff.
Yeah, but it is made reference to in this television show. But again, we also see other cultures that deal with money. So that was one of the strange like kickbacks from the start, the so-called Trekkies that I've like saw online. I'm like, you're not a real Trekkie if you don't understand this.
Yeah, even I'm not a real Trekkie, and I know that. Yeah. I knew that. I mean, at least the complaints that we have are to me are valid. Like if you're gonna make a series called Picard and you're gonna go the way you're going to, because the whole season they alluded, like I don't know if you picked it up, Picard was gonna die.
Yeah.
He was old, he had something wrong with his brain. It was going to happen.
Yeah, that'd been referenced in Nemesis, and I think there'd also been a reference with his health in the series too. So yeah.
Yeah, like he had like that issue with his brain has been going on for a while. I'm like, okay, we're finally gonna have the payoff where he's gonna pass away and it's gonna go to a new different direction. But now it just seems like a cop out.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I don't know if maybe they were afraid because of the fan reaction when Kirk died. I think that because there was a big reaction of how he died that way,
which was another
thing. But I was okay with that one as well.
I mean, it was fine. It just, you know,
he always said he was going to die alone, and he did really die alone. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, I don't know, but, I got, you know, certain people look at their heroes. I mean, I know you do it. I do it with some of our fictional heroes. Oh no, you can't treat him that way. But sometimes our heroes die in unheroic ways sometimes. And we just got to deal with it.
Yeah, sadly. All right.
So that was Picard. And if anybody disagrees or agrees with us, shoot us up or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter. Tell us what you guys think. I'm looking, and tell us what you guys think might come up for the next season. There was always a hint of, you know, we don't know what Discovery is doing. There was that one little rumor rumbling around that they may meet up with Picard and maybe you'll pick up there. So it'd be interesting, interesting twist.
I haven't watched Discovery, so I don't know how that would work. I mean, you've seen Discovery, so. Oh, yeah. I'd be interested to see how that happens. But yeah, so watch Picard. Check it out.
Hey guys, Kane here from the Heroes Asylum podcast. And I just want to let you guys know, during these turbulent times of the COVID-19 pandemic that's going on, it can be very frustrating to go to any kind of a grocery store, a Walmart, whatever you have may be, and not finding toilet paper, not finding facial tissue paper, not finding hand sanitizer, hell, not even finding soap. It is frustrating, and I get it. But I'm here to tell you, the guys at simplysupplies.com, well, they don't have that problem. They have toilet paper. They have facial tissue paper. They have hand sanitizer and any kind of cleaning and things that you actually need. So you don't have to be frustrated all the time. Just check out simplysupplies.com, put it in order. You can even have it for pickup or you can have it for delivery. And any delivery that is over $100, guess what? You get it for free. So like I said, guys, it could be turbulent times going around. You can be very frustrated having nothing in the house that you need. But I'm here to tell you, simplysupplies.com will have anything that you need when it concerns any kind of cleaning household supplies. So check those guys out. They're there pretty much 24/7 during this pandemic. And do us all a favor, stay safe, stay at home, and as always, get to the asylum.
All right, guys. So we're going to do, last week we started a little game. We're calling it the Mount Rushmore, and I'm kind of continuing it here. We're going with a different route. Last week we did WWE wrestlers. This week, Kane and I had to come up with four options for the Mount Rushmore. This time I get two for it, and he gets two. But what we're doing is the Mount Rushmore of one, the best comic book adaptation characters. You know, who did a great adaptation on the big screen or small screen for that matter? Could go either route for that, adapting a great character, not the story that was told in the movie, because I have seen some great adaptations of a good comic book character and just shit stories, but the character was good. In fact, one of mine is kind of there. And then we also have, we're both going to give two for our worst versions. So we got to look at the best, and we're going to look at the my two and Kane's two best, and my two and Kane's two worst movies or television adaptations. So Kane, I guess I'll go ahead and let you go. Let's
you gonna start bad or good?
Let's go bad. I think bad's gonna be a little bit more fun. So
okay, I'm gonna go bad first.
All right.
And the first bad one I have is from the Fantastic Four, and that's Julian McMahon as Dr. Doom. He was great in the series Nip Tuck. I don't know if you guys saw Nip Tuck, and he was I think he was on Charmed for a couple of years. He played Alyssa Milano's boyfriend. He was like a demon. I think he was a dark head or something, dark figure. The Dark One, I don't know. He was good in those series. But as, you know, Victor Von Doom, Dr. Doom, I thought he was horribly, horribly miscast. He didn't emphasize Dr. Doom at all, except for a slight mention to Latveria. That. Number two, he was basically almost like a Reed Richards, right? That's basically what he was. The movies never portrayed him like that. That he was some kind of mechanical or like a billionaire genius who just wanted to like dominate the world. I'm like, but no, Dr. Doom had his reasons for the things he wanted to do. At first, it was always about Latveria. It was always about his country. That was the first and foremost thing always on his mind. And number three, the electrical powers. The electrical powers. Dr. Doom does not have electrical powers. I don't know why when they keep making a Fantastic Four movie, they keep thinking, oh, wait, give him a cool cloak. Okay, cool. Let's get him some nice metal. And he has electrical powers. I don't know where that comes from, who thought of this dumb idea. Dr. Doom does not have electrical powers. He's basically like a Tony Stark. He's an inventor as like Tony Stark, and he's a humanitarian as well. He's a smart dude, and I think in the movies, especially Julian, he really just dropped the ball on him.
Yeah,
I thought he was off. I'll say this, and the character, and I think I have his name right here, Joseph Culp, who played Dr. Doom in that Roger Corman movie in 1994, I thought he did a better job with less to work with.
Yeah.
And that movie is awful. But if you watch his performance as Dr. Doom, he was great. That's Dr. Doom. And I don't think we've ever gotten a good on-screen version of Dr. Doom. Hopefully we do in the future. That's one of the big major mistakes. That's basically, if you do him right, Phase 5 villain, Dr. Doom, you know, write me up. I mean, and there are comics beyond comics beyond comics. I'm not even talking about Stan Lee and all of his versions of it. I'm talking like even current ones. The new Dr. Doom one I thought was pretty cool. It just, to me, they have never portrayed the character, and I don't think Julian McMahon's version helped at all.
No, I definitely will agree with you on that. That's a perfect example of the movie itself, the storyline that was good, but yeah, a bad adaptation of a character. Mine is the 2008 American neo-noir superhero film, The Spirit.
Ooh.
Directed and written, surprisingly, by one of the best out there, Frank Miller.
Miller, yeah.
But the adaptation of the spirit was very poor. Gabriel matched Eva Mendes. I mean, great character, Scarlett, or list of actors. Even Samuel L. Jackson's villain was just ridiculous.
What was he, the octopus?
Yeah, I think that was the character. It was just so bad. The film was based off of the newspaper comic strip The Spirit by Will Eisner. I mean, if you're into comics, you should know who Will Eisner is. If you don't, look him up. Will Eisner is probably the most comic strip and cartoon and enthusiasts look to as the benchmark. There's an Eisner Award out there for some of the best comic books and graphic novels. He you know, really put the stamp on it. You know, he was the Stan Lee of that time frame. But just a very poor adaptation of that character. We've seen different versions of like characters from that time. If you look at the who was it, the one with Alec Baldwin, I just drew a blank on it. He had the scarf around in the harder with an S too.
The shadow, right?
Even the Shadow was a better adaptation of a very similar character. I think what it was partially that they were still riding off of the last Frank Miller movie series that he had done beforehand. God damn it, drawing a blank on that one too. I'm sorry, guys.
The Phantom, was it the Phantom?
No, not the Phantom. It was the same design.
Savage?
No, it had Bruce Willis in it. No, the movie had Bruce Willis in it.
That's Sin City.
Yeah, Sin City. Thank you very much.
Okay.
But yeah, it was very done in the same style, very bringing that cartoon feel to it. Because I remember the spirit standing there and he had one tie on it, was flapping in the wind and it was red. You know, I just think it was just.
And the rest of it was black and white. It was I think the movie was just. That movie was just trying to be too clever, I think. You know how you get those movies that are trying to be too smart for itself?
It kind of, that's what it was. And I just feel his adaptation of what the spirit was just not right. Spirit, to me, was never, he was too upbeat for this, you know? And I know in the time frame that the spirit was done, there were, you know, the heroes were a little more white bread. He was just too white bread for my taste.
Just a little too white bread. A little bit too much white bread, I think.
Even Samuel L. Jackson's performance was just over the top. Like, it was crazy.
It's just the lines in those movies alone were just. The soundtrack was pretty cool. They had a cool soundtrack, but other than that, yeah, just. I saw that movie. I'm thinking, oh, Frank Miller did it. Okay, cool. I'm gonna get dark. I'm gonna get menacing, and then I go, what is this? And that's one of those things I fear sometimes when you hear about these, you know, comic book creators like directing a film.
But like, he had a good record beforehand, so I mean,
which is crazy.
You can't go on,
he did have help in Sin City. I think he co-directed it with Robert Rodriguez. So I think this was the first time that he had the reins to himself. So maybe he didn't know what to do.
Maybe he just used Sin City as the crutch and goes, oh, I did this. I'm going to do the same thing just with this story. And you can't copy. You know, film wise, something right over and just put another story on top of it. You need to stand out by yourself.
You cannot copy and paste.
That's pretty much what he did. Yeah.
So,
all right. So, what is your next one?
Are we still doing bad?
Yep.
Okay. This is pretty easy. I'm just gonna say one line because this is the only line he had in the movie. Okay. And you guess who it is? Here we go. Bomb. Bomb. That's right. I'm talking about Bane. From Batman and Robin. Truly one of the worst portrayals of any character in a movie. Just not even laughable, just awful and sad to watch. I mean, that movie is awful in its own right. Check out our Midnight Movies of the movies we did that was a year ago. But just bad. Just not even laughable. It's just sad. Like a great character like Bane, if you go to the comics and you go to even Tom Hardy's portrayal was really good. Bane was a thinking guy, number one. He was a tactician. He was a smart dude who happened to be enhancing this Venom stuff. He planned things out. There's a run right now called City of Bane where he planted all this stuff to mess with Batman's mind and Catwoman to ruin their freaking marriage along with Thomas Wayne. That's another stuff. Check out that run. But Bane has always been an intelligent guy. Nightfall. I mean, he's the guy who broke the bat. I mean, yes, did he do it because after a night of Batman being on a crime run and he was exhausted? Okay, that's fine. But still.
That was Bane. Bane made that happen. To make sure he was about ready to break.
And he's about intelligence. Like his strength and his brawn are as strong as his head. Like that, like his mere mass enhanced by his mind.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing about it. Even in the anime, I'll go back to the anime series when he's first introduced. He didn't just go out and just start hitting Batman. He's like, hey, Batman, I'm here to take you out. And he stated the reasons why. I mean, he was always an intelligent character. And I don't know why they thought to make him just a ugly, grunky, just a guy. It's just, to me, baffling. Just baffling.
It's like almost like somebody just picked up a comic book but didn't read what he said and just saw what he did.
Yeah.
And just went, oh, that's a perfect character. That's awesome. He just broke the bat. He doesn't need to say anything because it's just all action.
Yeah, he's a big muscle guy. He's going to beat up Batman.
It's like somebody literally just didn't read the bubbles.
I think they just saw like the picture of the Nightfall picture where he's breaking the bat. Like, oh, man, he looks so cool. Can we put him on screen? You know, we'll put him there next to Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that was literally just a year afterwards.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, a year or two after the bat had been broken. So,
yeah,
he was fresh.
That was 96. Batman Rama came in 97. So, yeah, it's about a year and they just wanted to capitalize it. But, man, I would have loved to have been in that writer's room and to see, like, okay, guys, this is what we're going to do with Bane. Here's his dialogue. What is this? Ugh. And then he says, bomb. And then he just moves around lumbering like a Frankenstein. Like, who thought of that? Who thought of that? I mean, there has to be some I think Chris Terrio was a writer in that movie. Shame on you, Chris Terrio. Shame on you, sir. Like, you should have known better. You wrote some great movies. Like, what were you thinking? Were you high? Were you smoking the dope? Like, I don't get it. Like that the words are right there. And just, I think beyond Dr. Doom being bad, I mean, that's sinful in one way. But Bane is just unforgivable. Unforgivable. I mean, thank God Tom Hardy came later on and kind of redeemed him a little bit.
He did.
He fixed it.
Yeah. I mean, but even with his run with the City of Bane, I mean, it basically, he even says it in the book. You know, he's like, I broke your body once. Now I'm here to break your soul.
Oh.
You know, it's just like, that's how much of a tactitioner he is in this. And you were right, you know, Tom Hardy fixed it, you know, the writing, the group for that movie fixed Bane finally.
Yeah, like one of the best scenes in Dark Knight Rises. I mean, he's not one of my, you know, but to rate the Bane is when he's in the jail cell with Bruce and he's just beating the hell out of him. And he's just like, you know what? Well, he's like, just kill me. He's like, I'm not going to break your body. I'm going to break your soul.
Yep.
And I was like, damn. I go, and that's freaking Bane. And this movie just clearly didn't get it. Nope. Like I said, thank God Tom Hardy redeemed him in Dark Knight Rises, although that was not a great movie, but at least he just made him a little bit more acceptable in that movie. So, yeah, Bane. Bane and Dr. Doom, awful. Two of the worst portrayals of all time. Hopefully, they fix Bane. Hopefully, one day they'll fix Doom.
Let's hope so. My next one is, and it kind of falls in line with the fall of the bat. But this one goes more into the death and the funeral of a friend from Superman, a 1997 American superhero film based on a DC Comics character of Steel. Anybody has known or seen Steel, it is with Shaquille O'Neal as John Henry Irons. And then, of course, he plays the alter ego of Steel. If anybody knows the history of Steel from the DC comic book runs is he was actually an inventor. He was working for a weapons manufacturer and he realized that the guns he was making was going out to the inner city kids. He stopped, decided I'm going to just go in and do my own thing. He went out and became a construction worker. One day, the site, something, an accident happened. He was falling to his death. Superman saved him. And he promised Superman at that moment, I will make my life worth something. And then, of course, when Superman dies, him being an inventor goes in and creates a suit of armor with a big giant S on it and begins to try to pick up where Superman left off. In the time of Superman, there were four Supermen that came in, the Eradicator, the Cyborg Superman, Superboy, and Steel. Steel was the only human. He was, you know, your Batman, your Iron Man. He used his gadgets, and his plight was more about inner city and trying to help the inner city and trying to fix what was wrong and trying to stop these weapons. Now, the storyline of Steel was decent. I mean, were talking about mass producing weapons, but didn't show his connection to it, and then show his niece's connection to it, who she eventually ends up in the comic books becoming Steel as well. But it just, they, they make no reference to the reason he became Steel. There is no reference to Superman in this movie. He's just a guy who builds a suit of armor, really. And it just makes no sense to me, because the story behind why he turned into what he did has so much weight in about who he is as a person. And then, of course, you know, you take the name, the history of John Henry Irons, you know, the railroad worker who had to go against the machine. And he's like, I can beat that machine. I can do exactly the same thing it can. Eventually killed him, but it was still, that heart was in there. And you didn't have that in there. It was just a sad, sad character. And also just a sad, sad movie. Just a pure cheesiness of it was sad.
It was an awful movie. I remember the rap song that came to that Steel. It's just so bad. And the suit was terrible. Oh God. Yeah. Like, yep.
Nothing about it. I think if they would have even like at least hinted, you know, they talk about it being a DC character, but it was just nothing DC about it. Nothing at all.
And he fought, what's his name from The Breakfast Club? The villain.
Yeah, Judd Nelson. Yeah. Yeah, it says Nathaniel Burke. Poorly done. It missed its mark on just the overall idea of who he was about. Yes, he was. It did show him trying to fight the local bad guy, but there was more to him than that. And it just missed its mark.
He was an intelligent.
And I don't blame demon. I don't blame Shaquille O'Neal for this. That was not his decision. I'm sure his manager like, hey, yeah, let's, why don't you get you acting or something. And I just think it's the people that did it. Warner Brothers, DC, shame on you.
Yeah, it was one of those things. He was hot at the moment. Because what year did this movie come out? Like 94, 92,
97.
Yeah.
He was kind of getting towards the end, though.
And they were like, you know what? You know, Shaq's the big Superman fan. He can't do Superman, so let's just do Steel. Like, really? Steel? And then the suit concept, awful. The whole idea, awful. I think he rode on a bike and a giant mallet was in the back. It was just so
well, bad. The mallet is definitely full on Steel. I mean, don't get me wrong. That is part of it. But I mean, just you have the career of the person that did this. When you really watch it and you actually see the movie, and then you find out who wrote and directed this, was Kenneth Johnson. Kenneth Johnson is known for being the creator of V, probably one of my favorite like 1980s like miniseries TV shows about an alien race that came to the Earth and basically took him over. He did Bionic Woman, The Incredible Hulk, The Alien Nation. So you see a bit of the 80s in the 70s and 80s cheesiness, and you can definitely see that all dripping through this.
I would agree with that, sir. I can't believe you remembered that movie. Oof.
What movie? Oh, Steel?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I don't remember neither. It's gone.
No. Like I said, when we said that, there's bad. There's bad you'll never forget. So there's other bad ones in there, but this one was just on its own. So what do you have for your first one in the best category?
The first one of the best is probably a character that I didn't think I'd ever see on the small screen, ever. And he's been on comics for years, and he was in the animated series. That's David Harewood's portrayal of the Martian Manhunter. Reveal.
David, which one? There've been a couple.
David Harewood. He's on Supergirl. Yeah. Okay. David Harewood. My first intro to him was when he was on Homeland, I believe. He was one of the colonels, kind of a dickhead colonel. And then, you know, for the first couple episodes of Supergirl, there he is as he's not John Jones. He's basically playing somebody else, Hank Henshaw. He's Hank Henshaw, who eventually becomes somebody else later on. So he's portraying Hank Henshaw throughout the year. But then you get these little subtle hints throughout the first season of like, maybe he's not who he says he is. And then you had the one episode, which I remember, and it ended with him with the red eyes. I'm like, no, they're not doing that.
Well, see, I didn't believe it because of that, because Hank Henshaw is the cyborg Superman.
Exactly.
So when I saw the red eyes and Hank Henshaw, my first thought was, is he the cyborg Superman? They threw a double twist in there.
They threw a big double twist. And then eventually you see him. He's in his container. He's talking to Alex. He's like, well, you know what? The gig's up. And I remember when that episode happened, I think I texted you and I told you, like, oh my God, it's Martian Manhunter. And he reveals himself to be John Jones. And the suit looks phenomenal. He like the CG they did on him. They don't use a lot of CGI, sadly, because, you know, it's a show. They don't want to waste dough. But he just looks like the Martian Manhunter. He talks like John Jones. Even now, they're like five seasons in, and he has his own like if you read the comics, he gets his own like little detective agency, and he helps other like metahumans or humans or aliens. I think it's aliens. And he's so good. He's got the tad. He's got the trench coat. He's John Jones. I mean, everything about him. It's just like I thought I was watching the Martian Manhunter from the Justice League Unlimited series. That's how good it is. And you know, you could say what you want about that show. Yeah, it's a hit or miss for some people. But to me, David Harewood as the Martian Manhunter, man, he just hits it on all.
Yes, yeah, I definitely agree with that one. Definitely. My first one for the best is Charlie Cox as the Daredevil from the Netflix series. I think he nails that character in every way. The pain that he suffers, the abilities. I mean, the guy's, you know, a machine, you know, when it comes to some of the stuff he does. If nobody's ever seen it, there's a couple of scenes, I think it's during season 3, where he's like trying to work out after getting his ass beat pretty hard. And, you know, he's doing shit that's, you know, upside down, you know, push-ups and shit. So, but I think his portrayal for Daredevil was great. Now I'm going to also put this in there. I believe the story of Daredevil is great for those 3 seasons also. I think they captured it great. I thought they did the origin of it great. And I thought how they stretched out in season 2 and 3, the Born Again story from Frank Miller. I think that how they interweave that through something new and fresh was awesome. You know, the addition of, you know, of the other characters that they threw in there, Elektra, Punisher, just everybody else, Bullseye, you know, everybody else they threw in there, even, you know, Dan D'Onofrio. It's Dan D'Onofrio?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio, sorry.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, even him as Kingpin. But I think Daredevil, Charlie Cox's version, just was great. I mean, I know we were all burnt and a little, you know, soured with Ben.
I'll tell you what.
Ben wasn't too bad.
Let me stop you at that point before you keep going. I don't mean to stop you. But that Daredevil movie that with Affleck is not as bad as people think it is.
It's not.
That movie, they shit on that movie a lot. And rightfully so, there's some stuff that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
But if you look at it,
cram everything in 2 hours, less than 2 hours. The TV show gave it time to breathe. They're doing the same story. If you really look at what they did in the movie to the TV show, they're letting that's what's great about a television series. You can let it breathe. Let a character's decision simmer for an episode or two. In a movie, you got 5 minutes. You got to just let that soak in and move on quickly. Mm. And again, I'm not with that with the Daredevil for Ben Affleck. I thought he did a great job. I thought for what he was given, he did good. But as far as like, I think somebody that deserves and brought over the pain and the challenges and sort of the humor of Murdoch, I think Charlie Cox did an awesome job in all 3 seasons.
I agree. I'm with you. He was one of the big focal points in that show. Him and D'Onofrio. And D'Onofrio always loomed large in that show. Even though I don't think he was in the second season. I think it was in one episode, but still.
He was one or two. Yeah.
But he was like that scene where he goes to jail and visits him in jail. He's like, when I get out of here, I'm going to ruin your life. I'm going to ruin everything you got. Oh, so good. But Charlie Cox, you know, to get on your point, yes, he was good. He portrayed everything. To me, the best scenes that he had were with Foggy, where he just like the internal thing, like Foggy's always trying to talk him down. But he's just like, I got to do this. This is what I got to do. And Foggy's afraid for him. And then eventually Foggy's like, you know what? Fuck it. I don't care. Just, you're going to do it anyway. You're not going to listen.
When I first started watching that, the first 2 seasons, they had that mid-season fight between them. I'm like, don't make this every season. Please, don't do this. But then they broke away from it. And then
I'm glad because after a while, I was beginning to hate the Foggy and Karen show. I was like, come on. You're going to crap on him all the time. He needs your help.
Yeah,
and then eventually, I think the late season 2 into season 3, they started like, you know what, we can't stop you. We're just
they just go do your own thing. I'm going to do this, and you go do that. You know, it was at the end of season.
That was the one thing about the Daredevil series that drove me insane was the constant whining of like, oh,
yet you watch Supernatural and the constant.
I'm sort of.
I was like, the second.
No, you're right. You're right.
The second time I saw it on Daredevil, I'm like, don't do this. I don't know. Don't ruin another show for me because with some constant whining, and they broke it off right after that. I'm like,
oh. Yeah, I'm glad they did. But yeah, Charlie was great, man. I love the scenes where he's in court. I actually like those scenes a lot better than when he's actually. I mean, the fight scenes are what they are. I mean, those fight scenes are just intense. You could feel it at every punch. That's the thing about those fight scenes. Some fight scenes in movies, you know, they're cool. You know, they're CGI sometimes and they're shot at different particular angles where you could see it looks really cool. But the fight scenes in Daredevil were like, just knock them out. You could feel every punch. and he's getting hurt, and you can feel like a bones cracking. Or just it's just so good. And I even liked him in the ninja outfit. Yeah. Like I liked his red costume better because that's the OG. But even like after a while, I was like, okay, you know, I can dig this ninja outfit. It's cool. It's all right. You know, he puts these little boxing gloves out. He goes kicks ass. So I was fine with that. It's funny that we mentioned Born Again, another great comic book one. You guys should just definitely check out. Yep.
All right. So what is your next one?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Daredevil and Ben Affleck, because I'm going to say something here as far as a portrayal in a movie of one of my favorite characters. Actually, you know what? It is my favorite character of all time. Everybody knows what it is. And everybody has the love for Michael Keaton, as I do. And Michael Keaton holds a special place in my heart, which I'll never forget. I even got one of his posters around here somewhere of the OG Batman 89 in my heart forever. Always going to love you there, Michael. But to me, the best on-screen movie portrayal to me is Ben Affleck's Batman. And I'll tell you why. I think in every single way, this is the Batman I've always wanted. He's the brooding one. Yes, but he's angry. He's moving around. He's a tactician too. He has that, you know, the Sherlock Holmes things where he's trying to figure stuff out. And I think if he was given his own solo movie, that's one of the biggest tragedies. We're not going to have an Affleck solo Batman movie. But to me, that the movie that we get him in where he shined was Batman v Superman. That was the Batman I wanted. I think when we did our movie watch along, even you commented like, this is Batman. That like when I'm reading a Frank Miller Batman, when I'm reading any Batman, this is the one I can see. I can picture in my head. It's Ben Affleck because he does the part. He does Bruce perfectly and he does Batman perfectly too. You know, you got to have that swag as the Bruce Wayne walking around, you know, that party scene at Luther's mansion. That's Bruce Wayne. But you know, the best Batman scenes is where he's just beating the hell out of people for no, just torturing them, kicking their ass, you know, driving around in the Batmobile, just like in the warehouse scene. And that's Batman. So you have those two versions. I wish we were going to get more of it, but to me, the Ben Affleck version of Batman on screen, it's hard to me. I'm saying Ben Affleck. I never thought I would say that, but yeah, Ben Affleck's movie on screen version of Batman to me is just top notch.
Definitely. No, I definitely will agree with you on that, which makes my final choice even more poignant. Henry Cavill, Superman. I think wow. He represented Superman in the best portrayal. I will admittedly say this, there are some issues with Man of Steel. Completely, there's a few issues in Man of Steel that stop it from being like the movie that would do it, but his portrayal of the Man of Steel was spot on. We got, you know, Christopher Reeves has always been the benchmark. He has that certain swagger, but what you miss from Reeves and anybody else that has portrayed him is Superman's weakness, his softer side, his humanity. You know, we don't really see it. We don't see often that struggle of, but I'm here to help, but they're hurting, they're attacking me because I'm trying to help. And he portrays that so well. And I think it was the joke there for a long time was the emo Superman because he has feelings. Well, guess what? Superman has feelings. He's always has to walk that line of being a human, you know, raised here, an earthling, adopted earthling at that, being raised here, loving everything here, but also having to walk that line of being the last survivor of Krypton. So he has to walk this fine line, and you see that in the movie. And yes, it can be an emotional thing. Just because you can bend steel with your pinky doesn't mean you don't have a heart and you don't have feelings. And I think he presented that and showed that, but at the same time showed the Man of Steel, showed the badass when it came time. And yes, when it came time, he snapped a motherfucker's neck. So I see him as, you know, the perfect version of Man of Steel. And not only that, but just the fucking way he looks too. Sorry.
Oh yeah. He does look like Superman. But yeah, I mean, there's so many poignant scenes that to go what you're just saying, like the church scene in Man of Steel is my favorite.
Yeah. Where he's sitting there. He is the most open and the most vulnerable.
Yeah, that's ever. The thing about it. Being the Man of Steel, you think, oh, you know, nothing affects me. But no, he goes to church. He goes to a pastor. Yes. Was there Judeo-Christian relationships? Of course there was. Lots of symbolism in that movie. But the way he just sat there and just like, what am I supposed to do? I don't know what to do with all this. He's just questioning himself, and you're a god, basically. What are you going to do? Because if you come out, guess what? They're going to come after you. They're going to expect things from you. Mm-hmm. And he's a guy who's just starting out. Like his father, you know, his real father, you know, Jor-El tells him, hey, this is where you came from. This is what you are, but it's not who you should be. And even like Clark, I mean, with Jor-El and what's his father's name on Earth?
Jonathan.
You know, the two fathers, they parallel each other in the same way. Because you would think like, oh, no, I'm your dad. You're going to do it my way. No, they both parallel each other. Like, look, you know, we'll give you what you need. But, you know, the decision is going to be up to you, what you got to do. And we're going to give you, you know, these tools and you're going to see the world. But ultimately, it's going to be on you.
Yeah,
that's the most fascinating thing. I just wish people would see Man of Steel just like that. Don't look at it for the destruction. Don't look at it for the next snap. Because to me, it's like, oh, we snapped the neck. He had to. What choice did he have? Where was he going to put Zod? Nowhere. No prison could hold him. He had no choice but to kill him. It's just like, if you think about it, the movie, it's almost like a First Contact movie. Somebody told me this, and I think they were correct. Like, it's literally a First Contact. This alien lands on Earth. He's been adopted by a loving family. He's basically human. And then he finds out one day, no, I'm not human.
Yeah.
He's told to hide this for his whole life, because if he reveals himself, they're going to come after him.
But it's not even a first contact from his point of view. It's a first contact for everybody. For him, he's an earthling. You know, that church he went to talk to, he went there every Sunday. Like, you know, pretty much all of us, you know, when we were growing up, you know, so he was going to talk to his preacher. You know, not talk to somebody that, you know, believed in another God this was his world too. And then to be in your own world, to be in your, basically really your own skin, and then all of a sudden feel like you're not welcome in your own skin
it's disheartening. Really, yeah. It's disheartening, man. That's what it is. And even at the ending of that movie where he talks to Harry Lennox, he's like, where he just throws a satellite down from the sky, which I thought was badass. He's like, you want to know where I keep my cape? Don't worry about it. Well, if you need me, just give me a call. He's like, what if you do this? He's like, General, I'm from Kansas. I'm just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And that was just a great scene. I think if people would actually look like that, and sadly, I think we're going to lose Henry Cavill. I think it's evident, which really sucks, because I would love to have seen a man.
I'm not giving up on it yet. I've seen some rumblings.
I really hope we lost Affleck. Please don't lose Cavill,
because Cavill doesn't want to go away, and it doesn't. It sounds like a lot.
I hope so, because
don't want him to go away. So
look, there were reasons why Affleck left. You know, if you guys have not read it, check it out. But then they make sense. But Cavill's out there. He wants to do it.
He wants to do it. And there's still rumblings that people would like him to do it. So
I hope so. There's some new management in Warner Brothers. Yeah. Be smart. Lock him up. You know, lock him in Gallup. I mean, Batman is what it is, but to keep two cornerstones of the Trinity in there, that's what I want. So good choice there, Captain. Good choice.
All right. So that is our Rushmore of worst and best superhero adaptations. If you guys like the Mount Rushmore things we're doing, just let us know. We're going to do a bunch of more. I have a whole list. I'm sure Kane can come up with a bunch of lists of just what we considered the best of something or the worst of something. You know, we threw the spin out there for something worse, so we can always throw in the worst of something, you know, when we're feeling like crapping on something. But we can, we have our options out there. Let's see. We'll go ahead and do a quick Legends of the Long Box section. Not a lot going out because, nobody's being releasing anything. DC's releasing some digital, but it's like really weird stuff. So we're going to do, Kane's got a couple books. I've got one book to suggest you with you guys is downtime. So we'll go ahead and jump into the Legends of the Long Box. All right, Kane. So what do you have? Since you got two, let's go ahead.
I got one, which is ongoing, and one brand new one. This is the ongoing one, Lucifer, issue 18, by Dan Waters, Max Fuhima, and Dave McCraig. Where we last left off, the great hunt is going on. The hunted god has been confronted by Lucifer. That's what everybody's going after, because the great hunt is this thing that happens every so millennia, and they hunt what's called the hunted god. And the hunted god has been reborn by this dude with glasses. They don't really mention his name. So basically, when the book begins, Lucifer and his hunted god are on a ship, leaving. Basically, they're trying to stay away from these hunters who are coming after the hunted god. But then you see that Odin wakes up. He basically escapes hell because these hunters have basically imprisoned him there. He confronts the hunted god and basically brings with him an apple. Now, this apple has been around since the beginning of generations. Apparently, it's only gods can eat this apple. And Odin confronts the hunted god, saying, hey, look, you know, Lucifer is telling you one thing, but he's not telling you the whole story of all this. So basically, the hunted god eats the apple. He discovers that Lucifer was part of the original hunt long back in the day. He weaseled his way into the hunt, basically. And there's a panel scene which Lucifer puts on this really cool armor. Captain, I'll send it to you. It looks so cool. It looks like something straight out of Star Wars. when he goes on this hunt. It looks really dope. Like, a good job by the artist in this one doing it. He goes in the hunt, and basically, over the years, when this hunt keeps going, they keep hunting the same thing, which is the hunted god. And when you kill him, he keeps being reborn. And basically, the idea for this hunt to keep going is basically for these things, these celestial hunters, to have something to do. Because if they had nothing to hunt, what's going to happen? The people are going to start hunting each other and killing each other. That's eventually what happens. Because Lucifer, in this run, kills the hunted god forever. So these hunters have nothing to do throughout the millennia that goes forth. And what happens? People and humanity start killing each other. And Lucifer basically was the one who did it, because he killed the hunted god forever, but he didn't know he was going to be reborn. And Odin reminds him, like, hey, Lucifer's telling you this, but guess what? He's lying to you. He's the one that killed you. He's the one that didn't want you back. But by circumstance or whatever, or life, you're brought back to life. You're here again, and you got to fix this. Don't believe this guy. So that was issue 18 of Lucifer. I can't wait. Now we got a meaty story, finally. I think for a while, I kept telling you they didn't have any direction. They got some cool direction now, and I cannot wait. All right.
Sweet. Awesome. Mine is actually an old run, but it's kind of timely, because here, I actually think in the next couple of weeks, it should be dropping the very last episode or addition to the DC universe, animated universe, that we can't have been raving forever. I think there's like 20 movies. I mean, it's 20 plus.
You're talking about the rebirth ones that they did from War? Because War, like the
2012 well, there War, were like War. There were like five that were outside that followed War, and then the rest were all kind of pretty much okay, in this okay. series. Yeah, there's a group that goes off by itself, a very small group. But I mean, I think there's a total of like 30 something in the animated movies. I looked it up on Vudu, because there's actually a package that you can buy on Vudu that is all the DC animated ones. It's like $100, but you get all the movies. And it has had like 30 something movies in there.
Oh, and that's a very poignant times. You guys could check that out, because
a lot of great movies on there. But this one is for the last movie. They're saying that this is going to end this whole saga, this whole story that we've been seeing over a little bit more than a decade, probably longer. I mean, honestly, I think that DC animated
2012.
It's been going actually a little bit longer than the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
And much better. Sorry. I live action, Marvel owns it. Animated, DC owns it. And if I had to put two of them together, I'm gonna go DC, because I think their story and the how much they delve into the characters, I think is much better. But it ends with the Dark Side Wars, and it's actually Justice League Dark, the Dark Side Wars, which is kind of different. I'm reading the Dark Side Wars, which is what I'm going to suggest for you guys to read. It came out a few years ago. Basically, the bulk of the story is it follows the daughter of Darkseid, who comes to Earth and is trying to defeat him. But we're also introduced to another Amazonian who was born the same day as Wonder Woman, who is also in contention with them. So it covers everything from from DC's Earth to the New Gods to Apocalypse. I mean, it covers a lot. I don't think this is really going to be what this movie is about, but it just goes in with the title. So I would suggest check out the movie when it comes out, but also read this book. It's not a super long graphic novel at all, but it's really well done. It jumps from book to book, as far as like a Superman book, a Wonder Woman book. But you can find it out there. There's a DC series of books called Essentials. You can find it on there. But it's a great read so far. And I definitely will suggest to pick it up. Great artwork, great storylines. Catches you instantly.
Well, anything with the New Gods, I'm in. So you don't have to convince me.
Well, like I said, yeah, it covers everything. Even with Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman does, most people don't realize that she is a big part of the Justice League Dark series. She is really the only one of the Holy Trinity that delves into the magical world. Everything about her is magic. Superman's anti-magic, and Batman's just, you know, the dude. You know, he's just a human guy. So you have your three occults, occult, an alien, and just a human. And so she's a big part of the DC Dark. So it's a really good book to series to read on that.
I'll check it out. That's what do you have, in tradeback or is it paperback right now?
I think it's on both right now.
Okay.
So old, yeah. But I mean, I'm again, Comixology guys. They're doing a great special right now. It's 60 days unlimited. So check it out. You can download tons of stuff. I believe this one was on one of the unlimited packages. So you just, you know, subscribe to them. I think they were, I don't think there was a charge for 60 days. So why wouldn't you join in and download and read all the books? And nice thing with Comicology, they do the cool little flip around and they like zoom it into the panel. So you don't have to zoom it up too big. So it's a fun, I always love reading off of Comicology.
Yeah. I think I'm going to read some Comicologies tonight while I'm about to pass out for work, but yeah, good stuff. I'll definitely have to check that one out. And you guys definitely check that out on Comicsology or head to your local comic book shop if they're open. So yes, you check that out. I got another choice for the week. It's a second, my last one, and it is Transformers and the Terminator. This one was written by Alex Mile, David Garcia Cruz, Go Latino, Jake M. Wood, and Tom Waltz. And the story is basically what you think it is. It's the Transformers and the Terminator. Actually, the book begins in the future. There's a Skynet. There's a resistance going on. Then you see the T-800, which is, I guess, Arnie's T-800. And, wait, there's a little bit of a twist, though. It looks like the T-800 and the exoskeleton of another T-800 are talking like, hey, they're inside the resistance space. Wait a minute. So why is Skynet inside of a resistance space? Then it turns out that, guess what? The world is apocalyptic, but it wasn't taken over by Skynet. It was taken over by the Transformers. And I'm talking both Autobot and Decepticon took over. So you find out this T-800 is being sent back to the past, of course, to try to fix it. And where's he sent back to? June 1984. That's right. The year the Transformers animated series debuted. Also the year that the Terminator movie came out, I believe, in 1984 also. And the T-800, of course, just like in every other faction, gets like his clothes by knocking out some driver. He meets a cashier waitress who happens to be the name of Sarah Connor. They get on this tractor trailer trucks and they have to go to this volcano, get to it before it explodes. But they find out on the way there that the volcano has already exploded. Now, what's in that volcano, you ask? I'm sure you could figure it out. It is the ending tale of the Transformer ship from the animated series. And basically the panel ends with the T-800 going into the butt of the ship and being confronted by these awakening Decepticons and the body of Optimus Prime to the side. Not a long book, but it pulls you in pretty fast. I'm sure there'll be more to come. That's Transformers and Terminator issue 1.
And who's that from? IDW?
Let me see. I have it right in front of me. This is, yeah, it's IDW. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think IDW is because they've got a different distribution plan than everybody else. So I think, oh yeah, that'll be a good one. That'll continue on. Because I'm if anybody's not familiar with IDW does some of the best at rehashing and revamping the 80s comic book runs that we all grew up on, even to the point where the G.I. Joe series, the one that was originally done by Larry Hama, that ended what, like around issue 155. And then IDW started doing its own version of it, like saying that the Joes retired and now they're coming back and like Bazooka's too fat to pass this test. And all, I mean, they do kind of that thing, but just not that long ago, they brought back in Larry Hama and he picked exactly back up at issue 155.5 and began continuing the run that I grew up with. So so if anybody's like really wants to get some reminiscing going on, they've also doing the Transformers series, which is one of the better books I've read. Also, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Gem. I mean, just all the shit that we grew up on. I definitely want to pick that the Transformers and Terminator up because I'm sure if I know IDW, they're going to do a great job.
And so far, we know one issue in. I mean, it's a little bit of a rehash of the Terminator movies, which I'm fine with. But
well, that's fine. That's what you have to do. You have to kind of rehash of Terminator people, and yeah, Transformers at the same moment. And then what the deviation will be is when they start interacting. That's when you're going to get the
big thing that I got from it is like, you know, basically the apocalyptic world was started by the Transformers. They did it. It wasn't Skynet. And Skynet basically is a savior of the world. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm in.
could be. So that's all I needed. They just, you know, the war took over. You know, that's something they were talking about even in the live action movies, you know, that we need you to leave because you're going to destroy our world. And that's probably what the path that they took, you know, telling the story.
Skynet's going to be the savior this time, which I find fascinating.
Well, wait, we'll see. They're hinting at it, but you know,
you never know.
All right. Well, that is it for Legends of the Long Box, guys. And that is it for us this week. Thank you. I hope everybody's staying healthy, staying in. Please stay in, guys. Get your deliveries in, or, you know, wear a mask or something and gloves when you do have to get out of the house. I've had to do it once this week. I'm trying to limit my time out of the house once a week. But we here at Heroes Asylum are trying to entertain you. We did just drop this weekend our Superman or Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice watch along. So check that out. We've also got, I was running late. I actually did a full show for my Clone Wars series, but guess what Michael forgot to do? Push the record button. So I'm going to have to redo it. It got down to like the last 5 minutes and I'm like, why is that light flashing? Son of a bitch. So I was frustrated and I stopped. So I didn't do it this weekend, but I will release one this week for the episode 7 of 7. And please, if anybody is an old school Star Wars fan, that episode has so much Easter eggs and nods to A New Hope. It's not even funny. So definitely get, you guys got to check that out. And I will have a review of that here this week as well. And we're trying to do extra stuff throughout this, cause we're all here. We did a trivia this week. So maybe next time we do trivia, we might, record that. Actually, I got a interesting, pop up from one of our folks that we did trivia on to a request to, have a local singer join in with us next time. So we might have some fun thing. So maybe we'll talk about getting some recording done on that. But again, guys, please take care of yourself. If you guys want to reach out to us or just check out any of our shows, we're at heroesasylum.com. You can also find us out at the social media network, and Kane will cover that for you.
Yes, sir. You can reach us on Twitter. Our Twitter page is Heroes Asylum Podcast at the Heroes Asylum. There is no E. It is HEROS. The only reason there is no E because somebody else took that, and we're working on getting that back. But it's Heroes Asylum at the Heroes Asylum Podcast. The Facebook page is our main area of contact. We love the interaction we got on. We have some cool stuff coming this week as far as our let me get it down here. I think I have it. I think Captain Mike has his own spin. Give me 1 second, kids. It's this week, Monday. You know what that means, kids. What they say. What they say. Last week we had – what did we have last week? I can't recall.
I think we did Deadpool, wasn't it?
No, I don't think it was Deadpool. I think it was something else. Anyway, of course you got Monday What They Say. I have a really cool picture picked
up. Movie Mondays, and we basically are doing What They Say.
So, yeah, What They Say. Way. So check out I picked out a cool one. I think you guys would dig it. Tuesday Titans, of course. Last week was Starro. I'm sure you kids love Starro. Going back to the Justice League's original enemy. That's right, Starro. I have a good one picked up this week. I don't think we're going to do releases of the week because the releases of the week, sadly, are dwindling down to the bare minimum.
I think what I might do is find some, like, kind of tie-in. Oh, no, last week was Bane and was Bane.
Is it Bane?
Last week, yeah.
Oh, it was Bane. That's right.
Yeah, I think what I might do is maybe just check to see what might be coming out digitally, really, and just kind of just throw those out there or do a suggested old school run, kind of throwback Thursday and Wednesday, kind of a combo days.
Okay. And I'm speaking of that, we have release Throwback Thursday, which will be, I guess, a combo with Mike doing the release of the week. So they're probably going to merge into one cool little thing. Friday Night Fights, we had an awesome one last week. We had Darkseid versus his son. Darkseid versus Orion. Come on, man. You can't get any higher than that. Then we had Saturday Night Sci-Fi and a great introduction to Serenity. Or not Serenity, Firefly. Yeah, right? Firefly. Same thing. I picked out a cool one this week, which I don't think any of you are going to get. And if you do, I'd be shocked because I can't believe I remembered it. But check that out for Sci-Fi Saturday. Of course, we always take your suggestions on the Twitter page. Look us up. We're always there doing some cool stuff, always new and being inventive. And as the captain always says, I will concur. Please stay safe. Stay home. Don't go out unless you have to. Delivery. Wear gloves. Wear a mask. Be safe out there, kids, because this is no joke. It's not a joke. And take it seriously for what it is. Enjoy the entertainment that we're going to bring to you. We'll deliver more content as the weeks and months come along. And as I always say, from the captain to you guys, get to the asylum.
See you. Have a good week.